Hello, everyone. Welcome to Ladies with Gumption, where we recap DC TV in a flash. This is episode 50, which is a huge milestone. Go us! Snaps. Snaps for Ladies with Gumption. And it is called Tale as Old as Time. I am introducing y'all, and my name is Tatiana, and I'm here with
Jessica
and May.
Wonderful. And you can find us on Twitter at DCTVGumption, on Tumblr at ladieswgumption.tumblr.com, or you can seek us out via iTunes or Google Play or any other podcast searching thing that you do. In the meantime, we have some feedback with Gumption to go over, such as from our lovely friend KJ, who had plenty of feelings about our Smallville episode. So I guess we'll, you know, try to think of things to say about that.
Does anyone remember KJ's many thoughts about
Smallville? So.
I just remember the thing about Chloe Clark.
He said there were hints on both ends of Chloe and Clark being a mid-game relationship. Dries may have been more interested in Clark Lex because for Smallville, that's the main pairing. The main downfall of the show was renewing it after season 5, so much stalling. So, thoughts?
I mean, I've said this, like, plenty of times. Like, I knew nothing of Smallville, so my whole thing was just focused specifically on Caroline's episodes, and in those episodes specifically, I didn't see it. I did see the Clark Lex thing, which I think that she was super interested in. But it wasn't, even if it was narratively, like overall as a series, there was some baiting, and I've heard that, you know, from everybody, that there's a lot of baiting between like Clark and Chloe. But in Caroline's episode specifically, I did not see any of that.
You didn't see any baiting for Clark and Chloe, is what you're saying?
Not really. There's a whole Jimmy thing that, was he jealous? But that just seemed like Jimmy's insecurity and not really like a, you know, Clark.
Right. I saw the constant reminder of Chloe's unrequited feelings for Clark in her episodes, which took me back to the early episodes where that was a plot point. That was the most annoying plot point. Now, as for him saying there's hints on both ends, I disagree with that just because I don't think there was ever a hint that Clark had feelings for Chloe in general.
Other than
friendship, of course, yes. Yes, he has friendly feelings.
I agree with
you. So, I don't know. It's possible that there's, because again, I haven't watched half of the show, so it's very possible that there existed hints in episodes I did not watch. But from what I had seen, I would think it was just one-sided hints, and Caroline's episodes contained the same one-sided hints that were there the whole time.
I see.
I mean, for me, it was, since I watched from the beginning, there was never any hints for Clark. I think like the only ship baiting that actually happened were in episodes that were like written as alternate things. Like there was like I think it happened in an episode called like Lexmas, where I don't know what happens and Lex is like, I don't know if he's hit on the head or something like that, and he just dreams up this whole state where everyone's kind of happy and living their best lives, apparently, according to his own brain. And I think, if I recall correctly, Clark and Chloe were in that episode together. But I just remember them shopping for trees, and I didn't think anything of it because I just totally ignored that. But I feel like that's the only time. Otherwise, like, within the main narrative, it never happened on Clark's end. So I agree with your disagreement, Tati, about KJ saying it's on both sides, because I never saw it from Clark. The entire 10 seasons, like, every time she'd say something, he would just kind of have a non-reaction, and I don't know if that was just Tom's acting, but it wasn't like Clark would give her, you know, adoring eyes or anything like that to make it seem
like he liked her. A proto-Emil thing going on. He's just like...
So, aside from that, thank you, KJ, for your feedback, as always. We love it when you disagree with us. We had plenty of feedback on Tumblr, so thank you guys for sending in your messages, and keep on doing that, because we always love responding, even if sometimes it takes us more than a few hours, because the only person who is timely about messages is Jessica.
Sometimes I don't get the notifications.
We'll just leave your message sitting there. But anyway... So one of those messages actually inspired today's podcast topic. So we'll talk about that in a little bit. But in the meantime, we got a couple like about, you know, theory of Nora's creation, right? Like maybe Cecile was supposed to be, wasn't supposed to get pregnant. It was supposed to be Iris. And Jessica has actually written an article about that before.
I did. So. I'm with an accent.
Mm-hmm. So,
that's what I call it. Oh, it was like five times.
Yeah, it was four times Nora changed the past or something like that, or didn't change the past and one time
like,
we did.
I think like four times we saw her change the past and, you know, one time we didn't see her. Yeah. So look that up.
Yeah, do that.
Based off of that crappy title promo.
Anyway, yeah, so the main thing that we were talking about, which sparked this week's topic.
Oh, actually, hold on, because mm-hmm. I got one on my Tumblr about Reverse Flash, and you know, this person was wondering if we would ever see Reverse Flash come back again because they really missed him, their favorite Flash villain. I was like, I really agree with that, and I feel like that's one of the things I think the Flash as a series has dropped the ball on, just because, you know, Reverse Flash is such an iconic villain, and he is like the villain. In Barry's world, at least. And so to kind of, like, effectively kill him off after one season, and then we haven't really came back for Flashpoint, but we haven't really seen him that much. And I feel like definitely in the 100th episode that he's got to come back, because, you know, 100th episode is iconic, should be really Flash, right. Really spooky, he has to be there. But I also feel like it could have been better if, you know, if they did kind of look what Black Lightning is doing with having Tobias Will still be in the subsequent seasons as the big bad, as a presence. Even if, like, their first Flash isn't, like, a main villain, I think they still could have done, like, they do, you know, the annual crossovers every year. They still could have done, like, a mini Reverse Flash arc somewhere.
Right.
Just so you know that he's there and you know that that rivalry is still going on, because right now it's just, like, they forgot about it. But that's kind of sad to me. But.
Yeah, I think it would be cool if somehow, maybe in season 5, they would just kind of bring that back and have it be more of they can keep their season-long Big Bad, but keep Reverse Flash as a continuing presence throughout season 7 up to 2024, because we know exactly. That, I think that he battles him, that's like the newspaper.
Yeah, they have to at some point develop that again. Now, I totally agree that it was a mistake to get rid of him in the first place. Like, they should have done what Black Lightning is currently doing with Tobias Whale. You know, like, build that up as a series-long villain. And I get, like, they had that fast pace, if you will, in season 1. Like, they liked, like, just getting through things. But if your next thought after Reverse Flash was Zoom, and you're like, but let's just make Zoom, like, not Zoom, and just basically make him Reverse Flash 2, but with no motivations, then you know that you're not getting better than Reverse Flash. So take a step back and be like, wait, let's spread this out. Let's stretch it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And they have, like, an opportunity to do that, too, now, because, like, Nora, time travel's being reintroduced again. Like, they can just figure something out.
Yeah.
I feel like having, like, Reverse Flash showing up in a couple episodes this season, even though he's not, like, the overall main big villain, having him, little chunks of him, snippets of him in each season would have kind of connected the seasons a little bit more, because now, like, each season has been very distinctive and in its own kind of, like, silo. But if they had Reverse Flash continuously throughout the series, I feel like that would have, like, blended it together a little bit more. But
Yeah, I agree.
And then I also agree. Matt better than Tom. Sorry.
Oh, I do too.
Matt Smyre, Reverse Flash.
Same. Yeah,
I feel like Tom Cavanaugh gets he was a great Reverse Flash, but Matt came in, I was like, yeah.
but if they had decided to keep him as a series-long villain, I think that Tom Cavanaugh as Reverse Flash would have been a superior choice to Tom Cavanaugh as 300 Wells's.
Yeah.
So.
But I really liked Matt in Flashpoint, so.
Well, it could be Matt in Flashpoint.
And in Legends.
And it could be Matt in Legends, okay?
Thank you.
It just went out to Tom in the Flash. But anyway. So before we talk about the Anon that originated the discussion about Kristen Kruick, the racism against Kristen Kruick and the hatred that she received from fandom, first we'll just do the news breakdown, because then we're just going to go right into the episode. So, we got quite a bit of news this week. First, there's the character breakdown for Lois Lane, in which we learned that she is a Caucasian woman in her 30s, and she otherwise is basically Lois. I mean, she's Lois Lane, right? So she's, like, she's stubborn. She goes after her stories. She rarely fails to get them. Like, yeah, it's Lois Lane. It's just that they confirm that she'll be a white lady. So that's too bad.
We figured it just because of season one. Like, we didn't forget season one. So I knew, like, some of the people that fans were wanting to see for Lois Lane, that that probably wasn't going to happen. Like, I know I saw, like, Arden Cho and Kylie Bunbury, and, like, those are great, but that's probably not going to be the choice unless Lois was adopted.
So much hope.
Yeah. But, I mean, like, you know, make out my hopes up with, like, Jenna Dewan being part Lebanese. Listen, like, maybe.
Because they always code Lebanese people as white, which always pisses me off. So I'm not surprised that she's going to be a white woman, but because they never actually explicitly said that Lucy is a woman of color in season one, but I'm still sad about it.
I feel you. But yeah, otherwise, I'm really excited to see Lois, you know, so it'll be great. And I have seen people talk about this, but it's like, you know, Lois has gotten shit on before, even as a white lady, because she's older than Clark, because she's too abrasive, because she's too whatever. So there is like a wide, like, decades worth of, over half a century worth of misogyny against Lois Lane for being, like, you know, too much woman for Clark, or a career woman, or whatever bullshit. So it's not like, I don't know what I'm saying. Just basically, you should still love Lois Lane. There you go. And she'll probably still get paid, even as a white lady, is what I'm saying.
Love who Clark loves, because he doesn't care that she's too much of a woman for him, quote unquote.
I mean, like, Laurel still gets hate, you know,
Anyway, not on my watch.
That's all.
Okay. We finally learned the launch date for DC Universe, which is going to be September 15th.
And which that's going to start Monday.
Yes. Oh, there you go. And it's going to start with DC Daily. Like, they're going to have, like, I guess, like, I assume it's going to be daily DC news with, like, rotating guests, including comic book writers, Harley Quinn Smith.
Yes.
Kevin Smith's daughter. And some of the DC All Access hosts are going to be on that now. So now I'm like, so basically DC Daily is DC All Access, but you pay for it.
Yeah.
That's what I'm getting out of that.
Yeah.
Hopefully with more guests. Hopefully with, you know, hopefully they'll have, like, interviews with, like, the Aquaman cast or something. You know, like, that would be cool.
That would be cool.
Yeah. Just throwing ideas out there, DC. Just feel free to take it. Anyway. So the first big drop for DC Universe is going to be October 12th, which is when Titans premieres. Unfortunately, the same week as the rest of the Arrowverse.
I feel like this is another sign that they want the show to tank, putting it in the same week as Arrowverse. Because, like, and, you know, someone said, well, it's good because they just want, like, DC programming for every day of the week, because the 12th is a Friday, so it'd be the last DC show premiering that week. But, I mean, like, they could have started it in September when there were no other competitions competitive shows on, so everyone could go and focus on Titans. And even if it was, like, staggered, so, like, late September going into October, people would still be, like, connected to the show. But if you premiere it the same week as the rest of the CW, which is free, and they're on network TV that everyone can watch without paying money, usually, I mean, like, this, you know, no one's, it's going to be kind of hard for, I feel like, Titans to stand out in the DC TV crowd kind of thing. So it's a little aggravating, and especially since for us, because, like, we're not
we have to do all the shows,
6-7 shows,
and listen, they have to make so us ugly. Pay for it, and it's on a Friday. Like, come on, guys, what are you trying to do?
It's weekly. It's not, it doesn't even all drop at once. It's an episode every week, so basically you know, I don't even know what's gonna Doom Patrol.
Doom Patrol. No, but honestly, my question is, why are they letting a month go by between the launch of DC Universe and the drop of the first big show on DC Universe? Like, that gives a month of time where people just don't really need to get it, you know?
Yeah.
So I don't know.
I feel like, if they're going to just drop stuff people have already seen, like maybe Batman the Animated Series and things like that, then it's like, well, I don't need to buy DC All Access to, like, watch that show, so it's weird.
Yeah. Oh, well. Anyway, so, like Jessica said, Doom Patrol, which has just cast Alan Tudyk Woo-hoo! As Mr. Nobody. So, I don't know. Things are getting wild over at Doom Patrol. They've got all the...
It's already the superior show. It is like the... I said the main course.
Yeah.
Like the SNL skit with Bill Hader. He's like, it has everything. It's got Brendan Fraser. It's like, everybody's in the show.
Yeah. So, yeah. So, I mean, I was already excited, and now I'm even more excited. I mean, obviously, I hope, like, obviously they have the Diane Guerrero, which I'm the most excited about, but hope, and they've got Cyborg, so really, you know what, never mind, they have everything, I don't know what
I'm all we about. Need is for Starfire, for Anna Diop to just cross over.
Yes, she could just hop on over to Doom Patrol. and Beast Boy can join her. There. We'll just leave Titans the way they want it, which is just Dick and Raven, all right? Anyway, so on Flash, the West Allen family poster was released, and it is a momentous occasion because it was the first superhero family poster in the CW Arrowverse. So snaps for the West Allen family. Yes, and it should be noted that they are being called the West Allen family. Mm-hmm. So. Yeah. We can assume Nora's last name is, in fact, West Allen, and Barry's just the odd man out. We should just change his last name.
How progressive of them. Yeah. How progressive of them.
Mm-hmm. So yeah. So, yay, they used season one Grant, who looks like he can't be married or have kids, but it's still...
It was like really some weird photoshopping, and I don't know if it was E! News, because I feel like E! News put a filter on it that made it like lighter. Like when the CW released it and Candace released it on her Instagram, they changed the filter on it. So I don't know if it's just like looking at it for a long period of time, but it looks better to me like today. Yeah.
It does look better today than it did the first day. Yeah. I agree with that. And I don't know if it was because some people like tweeted out and were like, it's so great, or if it was like because you set the filter.
Yeah. It's just that yesterday at least was not like it just had like the big letters like what did it say, like welcome West, like meet the West Allen family, and now that was taken
something
off
like that.
And the E! News logo was taken off too, so yeah, I agree, it looks a little better, but you know, it's fine. I'm not gonna say anything. I'm just glad that it exists, I'm glad that it's there, I'm glad that The Flash is saying that we're centering this family, so that's just exciting.
Right.
And Thomas Pound actually mentioned that as well, because he quoted the poster, and he was saying, you know, this basically, you know, if you like this season, poster, you're really going to like this season.
Yeah. Which
is a good sign.
Yeah, I did like that. And Sterling Gates did tweet it out today, too, and he was like, meet the, you know, he's like, you're going to get to know them better this season. So, also a good sign. Very excited. Anyway. Oh, another super important news. Tom Cavanaugh got a new puppy named Molly. So, yay,
and
Molly!
Now everyone has a dog.
Yes, but unfortunately, Kate Gray is not on set at the moment because she had to take a leave of absence because she's sick. So, everyone send well wishes to Kate and hope that she gets better soon and that she's able to go back to work. Okay.
She can give us sentence.
She can give us pet photos. But also because she's a wonderful person who deserves our support.
We know what Jess really cares about.
That's what I really wanted to say. She's just too
Anyway, so the anon that we got regarding Kristen Kruick pointed out that we didn't acknowledge enough, or we didn't talk enough about the fact that Kristen Kruick is a woman of color. She is she's half Asian, and that led to a lot of criticism, racist comments about Kristen, about Lana, even though Lana was coded as white in the show. Like, when did we go back and look and like her whole family's white? But despite that, people would still use racist terminology and talk about her in a derogatory manner. And I'm sure that it led to like the extra hatred of Lana, because like Lana is like super hated and she doesn't really do enough to warrant that hatred at all. Like, I don't know, like, having watched and even refusing to watch parts that don't have Lois, I've never, like, that's how much I hated the idea of Lana, and I've still never, you know, felt like hatred towards Lana. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, the problem with Lana is that Clark is a piece of shit to Lana. It's not that Lana is I don't know what the problem would be with Lana, but anyway. So then this Anon went on to say, I wanted to ask a broader question. I know you can't claim experience of older fandom racism, but I'm sure you've heard the lore, like the barrage of mail that got sent to Saved by the Bell after the Lisa Zach kiss, or the treatment of New Uhura after the first movie. Spork shippers on LJ literally said Spock would never touch a racial slur. My question is, do you think about older fandom characters who were treated horribly but didn't have the built-in defense force of online fandoms? I love older sci-fi fantasy shows, and I think about how characters like Tyr on Andromeda were fetishized by fandom, or Harry Kim was completely emasculated and dismissed on Voyager. Are there any that you think would have benefited from a stronger defense of fandom? So that is what we are going to talk about today. Basically, horror stories of fandom's past, the entitlement of fandom, and what role the rise of social media has played in shaping diversity and inclusion on television. And to lead us through this maze, this house of horrors, will be May.
Yay, even though you introduced it really well, so I have nothing to add except to repeat. but yeah, I mean, basically, like what you said about older fandoms, and since we were also younger then, and there was, before even social media, there were forums, and then before that, there were people who wrote nasty letters probably to the creators and to the networks and whoever was in charge, telling them exactly what they thought. I mean, I know that Tati herself has pulled up, like, letters from people to comic book writers about, like, how they don't like women, and, you know, specifically, like, Iris not doing these things and blah, 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 and, like, oh, well,
yeah,
I would have...
Or how they didn't like Storm's addition to a certain X-Men team.
Yeah. So, all of these things, except now it's just, like, double because these are people of color's stories and how they were probably, like, mistreated or whatnot, but there was nobody to, like, check anyone behind the scenes of what was going on. So we have four criteria this time around. The first one being horror stories from older fandoms pre-social media and our experience with them, if any. Criteria two is, let me find it. Man, we wrote a lot. Okay. Is how racist/homophobic backlash may have prevented people of color or characters of color from thriving on their shows. Criteria three is, do we think social media would have helped elevate people of color /LGBTQ characters if they had vocal fandoms back in the day? And then finally, how writers can strive to take or remove bias or help to offset bias in their writing for characters of color. So we're going to start with criteria one about the horror stories of pre-social media fandom.
Whew. I feel like it's hard to judge older fandoms pre-social media because when you have fandom, like, so spread out, like, you know, before Twitter and all of that, you had, like, the separate forums, and then before forums, like, people had their own, and, like, you know, you wrote letters, like you said. And so it's, like, so spread out. You can have your own kind of happy little bubble of space that never crosses with anyone else's. And so, like, you're in your happy bubble and you don't really see or notice anything that's going on. And even like people in their own little negative pessimistic bubble, they're usually in that little bubble by themselves. So they didn't know that they have other racist people to commiserate with. So I feel like it was like a bit disjointed. And I've only been a part of like two book fandoms before really getting into the Arrowverse. Like I was really into the Harry Potter book fandom and then into Game of Thrones when I started reading that before, you know, I got into the Arrowverse. So largely I just take in TV as it's presented on the screen and how the story is written on the screen. And while I may notice some things, especially now more than before, because, you know, that whole, you go from woke and then you can't go back, you look at older shows, you're like, wow, this is really white, or wow, I didn't notice that was really racist, or, you know, yeah, that is kind of weird that this character is put into this kind of position. They're the only character that's treated that way. So while I noticed that now, especially, and I may not have noticed it then when I was watching it, it didn't really occur to me that there could be whole sections of the internet or the United States dedicated to justifying this character of color's like mistreatment or asking for them to be killed off. It's just not something that I think occurred to me until you actually get into fandoms and you start those worlds bubbles start like meshing and conflicting with each other. Like the Anand was talking about with Smallville and the kind of coded message or coded racism, dog whistle racism that was used against Kristen Kirk. And like we said, like her Lana is coded white in the show. So the fact that on top of all like the regular run-of-the-mill misogyny that she got just for being like a woman in the love interest of the superhero and being outside the secret, you know, the fact that it was so common that there are these coded and loaded terms used to describe her, such as like the porcelain doll, was mentioned a lot in some of the nods that we got. It's like, that's kind of how you can tell the transparency behind like the real reason for this over the top hatred of Lana. Because there's no other reason for that to specifically come up and specifically to be used if the character's not even portrayed as one of color. So it's I don't know. It's kind of like how people say that, you know, Iris just doesn't look right, or Iris, you know, there's all these like coded ways that Iris is just not right for Barry because da 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 da. And they say that, like, I would say that if she was white too, but you know, not really. And those little coded terms, especially like the porcelain doll thing, is like how you know, like, I see what's really like going on.
Right. And then and those things change based on the race too. Mm-hmm. So like Lana could be written exactly the same way, and because she's Asian, they say she's like a porcelain doll. And if she was written the same way and was black, they would say she was too aggressive or she was too bossy or she was
Yeah. That's exactly it. So we see you with your coded terminology. And then the Nan also mentioned like the angry fan mail sent over the Uhura and Kirk kiss and then the Zach and Lisa kiss. Like, and especially with Zach and Lisa and Saved by the Bell, do you know how mad you have to be? And, you know, the comics, you mentioned again, people writing, like, letters to, like, the comic book writers. Like, how mad you have to be to write a letter campaign to a network over a kiss? One kiss. And as far as I could tell, like, I don't know if it was ever, because it's been so long, I don't know if that episode was ever supposed to lead into a Zach and Lisa kind of romance,
it
and it just
felt like it was going to, like, because it wasn't a one and done. Like, they had one episode where it was like him and Jesse kiss, but then in that same episode they were like, no, we're better off as friends, and then they went back to their significant others, whereas like right. In this episode they walked away and it fully intended on being, it seemed like it was going to be like an actual storyline, so much so that when I was a kid I thought that I had missed episodes, like that's why it was so weird to me back then.
Mm-hmm. But like how mad you have to be to write a letter campaign over a kiss, and then like how many letters must the studio have gotten about that kiss for them to completely like change the story? Like how many letters, angry letters, does it take to capitulate to racism? Basically, like I wonder like how many letters that network got, and then like I feel especially aggravated because now that I think about it, the backlash over that potential storyline, maybe, like, the reason that Lisa seemed not only, like, I'm going to say doomed, because really she was doomed to be eternally tied to Screech, but also the reason why Lisa and AC never got to be a thing, because I felt like, you know, why are these, this, because they all, like, paired up with each other sometime throughout the series, and I think I was reading, because I was looking up Saved by the Bell stuff, and they were saying that one of, like, the quote-unquote fun facts about, that you probably didn't know about Saved by the Bell, was that Lisa and AC were never, they're the only two cast members, or characters that never dated, and so I was like, well, I wonder why, but we know why.
Well, Lisa never actually dated Screech either, technically.
No, but they were, like, romantically tied throughout.
Oh,
series.
I have never seen Saved by the Bell.
Really? Oh, interesting.
The only thing I saw was that clip where Jesse, I guess, says, "I'm so excited, I'm so scared." That's it.
You got to the classic episode, the meme one.
Yeah, the meme. That's why I've seen it, because of the meme. But yeah, otherwise I haven't seen it. But yes.
And then, like, my other show that I really enjoyed growing up, and I know that Nan was like a sci-fi fan and my, like, the other one, I was, like, Boy Meets World with Shangela, Sean and Angela. And I think that was, like, maybe, like, my first interracial black woman relationship that I saw on TV growing up with, like, a black woman and white man. And their relationship was definitely angsty compared to Korpanga, because Korpanga was, like, the ideal one. And they had their shit, too. But it was, like, the kind of, like, ideal happy sunshine couple. And Sean and Angela were a little bit more Eeyore in that respect. But they always, I always assumed that they were destined to be together. And even when the series ended and they kind of, like, were separated, I didn't really feel like the what would happen on the sequel was going to be the thing that would happen. So, like, the effects of fandom racism that affected that ship were, like, a delayed reaction, I think, because, like, on the sequel, Romance World, and they brought her back specifically to
give her that blessing.
Relationship apart so that he can marry, like, the white woman who was, like, the girl's best friend's mom or something like that. And I was just, like, that, like, it was kind of, like, pouring salt in the wound.
It's why I refused to watch the sequel, to be honest.
Yeah. Yeah. So, yeah, I got so upset, like, the way, like, because they built it up, like, her return to the Girl Meets World show, because I think she was, like, she was obviously, like, the only one of the four that wasn't on the show as, like, a series, like, regular or whatever, and then they built up, like, her return, and it was, I would, they had reunited them and put them together as the endgame couple, like they were supposed to be, then, you know, I definitely would have, like, watched the show. But the way that they did it was just so, like, disrespectful. And, like, just watching the show growing up, I don't think it ever registered to me. Like, a black woman, white man was super rare. Mm-hmm. And watching it, I loved them together. And I don't think it ever registered to me at the time the gravity of that some people might not want this ship together. Because Sean is, like, you know, Corey is, like, the good boy, and he's the protagonist or whatever. But Sean's kind of, like, the bad boy that everyone liked. Mm-hmm. And so now, if I watch it now, I'd be like, oh, yeah, fandom is definitely not going to want Sean, wouldn't want Sean and Angela to be together. Like, white fandom wouldn't want that. But right. Watching the show growing up, and, like, actually, like, looking back at the 90s and, you know, TGIF and everything. Sometimes I feel like TV is working a little bit backwards, because I feel like there are more choices, at least what I was watching. You had, like, The Cosby Show, you had Different World, Family Matters, I had Moesha, Girlfriends, Living Single, Sister,
Boy Meets World
with Shangela. What'd you say?
The Hughleys.
Like, all of this, and I feel like I don't have that anymore.
Vulture article, I think, that was about that. And it was, like, back in the 90s, there were, like, 17, like, black shows. And now there's, like, way, way less.
Well, I think the thing, too, is that, like, there's, like, a lot of options. So, like, you could find them, like, if you were going to go look at, like, the Oprah Network, mm-hmm. or, you know, like, but there's not mainstream ones.
Right, exactly.
And back then, like, there was fewer options, so there was as many or more shows, but in mainstream mm-hmm. channels
yeah.
that everyone had access to.
So the, yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Which is disappointing, because, like, for me, like, I'm sorry to interrupt, but, like, Angela and Sean were, like, so normalized to me, like, growing up with yeah. that, it's like, oh, you know, like, this is great, you know? And so, like, in your head, you subconsciously take it in, and you're like, this is so normal. So
exactly.
To feel like people didn't think it was, is just bizarre.
Like, the fandom issues that we experienced today existed then, like, probably with Shangela as well.
Mm-hmm. Right. It's just that you didn't hear about it, because right. they weren't, right. yeah. But here's the thing, though. Like, that's why it's even worse of a step back that they didn't bring back Angela, like, for real and make it an actual ship again in the new show, because there are people who were probably resistant to Sean and Angela when it happened, but over time, like, because, like, that's such an iconic show and that was an iconic ship on an iconic show, mm-hmm. it would have been, like, if they brought it back and they had them there, it would have felt more normal to those people, mm-hmm. you know?
Yeah.
And so then, by taking it back, it revalidates their original point of view.
Yeah. And I kind of wonder, like, you know, especially with Boy Meets World, like, what made the writers, like, bold enough then mm-hmm. that they could be bold enough now in the sequel to write them the ending that they should have deserved?
I was because, at, like, the Boy Meets World panel at AwesomeCon in June, and they were actually mentioned, so Will Friedle and Ben Savage and Ryder Strong were all there, and they were saying about how, like, the show kind of went under the radar for the network, so they were kind of allowed to just do whatever they wanted for a long time. And at one point, the writers were like, yeah, this show's, like, super white.
Yeah.
So they brought in Angela to try to diversify, like, the main cast a little bit. And then when they brought Angela on, they also hired a black female writer to write for her. So in a sense, there was like a little, it was a little bit of ahead of its time, because they at least tried, and they actually made like that effort to bring someone into the writer's room to write for this character rather than attempt to write for her themselves. And I think that was just like very interesting, because they, according to them, they flew under the radar, that they got away with like a lot of silly things and a lot of serious things and all this other stuff that other shows didn't do.
I wonder if that helped, like, why I connected so much to that show. Like, that's, you know, thank you, Boy Meets World. I like, and then the last one that I'll bring up before I ship it off to somebody else, American Dreams was another drama that I remember with an interracial ship. And American Dreams is kind of like the, it was on NBC, I think, and it was like the whole American Bandstand era, so like the 60s. And it started, it was like Britney Snow's, like, first big break. She played Meg, was the daughter, and then it was a white family and a black family living in the 60s in like Philadelphia, and Meg was the daughter of the white family, and then Sam was played by Arian Escarpeta, and he was the son of like black family, and they were like friends. And I remember you know, because it was the 60s, there was like quote unquote drama of them being friends and like hanging out and all that kind of stuff. But from the beginning of the show, there were hints that they would eventually like date or end up together. And it started to happen in the third season, but then it was like almost like whiplash because they brought in Chris, played by Milo, I cannot say his name, Ventimiglia. You know, Milo.
Ventimiglia, I think, right?
Ventimiglia. Yeah. And showed up, and he was automatically Meg's, like, new love interest. And this series is, like, canceled after the third season, so I can't really say for sure what would have happened. But I find it, like, really funny, like, all the same, that the show never really pulled the trigger of a ship that they had been building on for three seasons between Meg and Sam. And I don't know, like, again, like, I don't know if it was behind-the-scenes letter campaigns that people, like, I don't want Meg and Sam to be together. And then all of a sudden they have a new shiny white boy named Chris, and who is basically a carbon copy almost of Milo's character on Gilmore Girls, because he's the same like bad boy kind of character. And then, you know, all of a sudden they're Megan Sam who kind of thing. So like looking back on that, I wonder if I digged hard enough, could I have found some stuff about reasons why they didn't pull the trigger on that ship.
Yeah, I don't have a lot of, like, useful things to say about pre-social media fandom, because I haven't really heard any of the ones outside of the ones that have already been brought up. Like, obviously, we all know about the resistance to Uhura in Star Trek and her getting that first on-screen interracial kiss with Kirk, you know, and, like there was a huge fuss about that, like, censorship or whatever. Like, oh, think of the children. Like, what will the children think a black woman kisses a white man? I don't know, what will they do? Or that letter writing campaign about Zach and Lisa. So like, but I do think that you can see fandom's reactions just by their absence, right? So when something bad happens for you know, a black character or a Latino character or an Asian character or anything, there was like no one was making letter writing campaigns about that, right? Like if you want to go as far back as stuff like Mickey Rooney playing that horribly racist stereotype of an Asian man in Breakfast at Tiffany's, right? Mm-hmm. And for decades after that, still Breakfast at Tiffany's is like a classic film, right? That everyone loves, and very few people are like, but let's break down this awful...
16 Candles with their...
Yes, exactly. 16 Candles with Long Duk Dong, who is, you know... I mean, at least he was played by an Asian man as well. But it was a super racist portrayal. And he was like the butt of the joke, right? In that movie. And again, that's just like a thing that like you can pleasantly enjoy 16 Candles that everyone enjoyed. No one's, you know, like, let's fix this.
Or you can enjoy the references by just watching To All the Boys I've Loved Before.
There you go. The new 16 Candles to all the boys I've loved before. Go watch it. I know you already have. Y'all have already seen it 10 times. Go watch it an 11th time. But anyway, and then, like, or things like, you know, like, bury your gaze for the other kinds of stereotypes, right? Like, or in fact, like, not having gay characters at all. Or if you did, they're, like, forever alone, you know, or they get, like, one kind of creepy relationship and then it, you know, is toxic and goes away and then they get nothing. And no one's going to, you know, you only get the backlash when you actually do it for real. Like Jack, Greg Berlanti himself, trying to get Jack to be gay on Dawson's Creek. And to have that be a storyline that sticks, and to get his first kiss, etc. And he had a really big uphill battle to make that happen, because that's the stuff people reacted to. People weren't, like, proactively complaining about people being treated poorly, minority characters being treated poorly, because they are not concerned with thinking about minority characters as people, right? Now, I was just going to talk about, like, for myself, I had, like, again, it's, again, like, the absence of was what clued me in to how fandoms, you know, in the future might react. Just, like, the first exposure that I had to diversity was American TV, because when I was little, I always watched the novelas, right? Like, I wasn't allowed to watch TV unless my mom was watching something. So she watched the novelas, so I would just watch them with her. And I didn't even consider the fact that, like, everyone on screen looked the same, right? Even though Latin America has plenty of diversity, we have a very large Asian population, very large Black population, but they were never on screen, right? And even indigenous people were not on screen, right? Like, darker skinned indigenous people. Everyone that's on screen is, like, the whitest they can possibly be, that they just basically look European. And so it wasn't until, like, you know, I got to walk home alone from school and then have hours with the TV to myself before my mom came home, and then I could watch something else. And then it's like Nickelodeon, like all that, right? And I was like, wait a second, other people can be on screen, right? It's not just white people who are on screen. I can't believe it. But anyway, just listening to, like, the way people talk, right? The way people talk about those characters and, you know, like, in Latin America, like, or even the way people talk about other people. The language that's used is just so clearly different when you're talking about a European-looking person versus a more indigenous-looking person. So, like, it was more obvious to me in Latin America, the racism, because it's very, like, open. Like, they just don't really care. But when you're in the United States, it's more coded, right? It's more like the absence of protecting people of color. Then, of course, obviously, like I said, the U.S. is not, it's not all rainbows and unicorns and puppies, as we know, even though it seemed that way to me at first, because suddenly there was diversity. but, like, for example, Sailor Moon was one of the first things that I watched when I did watch American TV, and I was obsessed with it. And I'm, like, a, like, super purist, so I'm like, I have to get, like, the actual original language, otherwise I'm not really gonna know what's happening. So, like, track down, like, the subtitled version, Japanese subtitles, right, to watch. And then instead I find out that Michiru and Haruka are not cousins like they are in the American version, that they are actually lesbians. Like, they are actually in love with each other. I was like, wait a second.
Sailor Pluto and Sailor Uranus, right?
Uranus and Neptune. That's who it was.
Neptune, that's who it was.
Yes. Pluto, yeah. Neptune and Uranus. It's very hard not to say Uranus.
I do.
It really is.
But anyway, I was shocked to find that out, just because, like, that's such a huge change that they make, and, like, it changes a lot of the stories that they have. But they did it for, I don't know, again, the children, right?
I was going to say, just like you've never seen Saved by the Bell, I've never seen Sailor Moon.
What? Okay, clearly, I need to watch Saved by the Bell, and you need to watch Sailor Moon. Let's switch.
You know, you're a nice fan because Tatiana is watching Saved by the Bell and May is watching Sailor Moon.
Anyway.
I'm just going to be watching Smallvillain because I've never seen that. So.
Anyway, so even though this is supposed to be pre-social media, I will just bring up what was the cost of social media, because that is when I was really got to watch TV on my own, right? Freedom, freely watch TV. So, like, Gossip Girl was, like, the first show that I really just got to, like, immerse myself in. And at that point, fandom was really, like, message boards. The actors weren't really on social media. The creators weren't really on social media until the very end, to, like, the last two seasons of the show. So for the first few seasons, I got to experience fandom, like, when it's in its own bubble, before it gets to really talk to the creators. And it was also, that was also my first experience with just, like, actual, like, fandom racism, which is very ironic. And I've talked about this before because, well, Gossip Girl was super white. But Vanessa got the most hate, even though she's literally a female Dan, right? Everything about her, Dan also has, except that he is a white man. And so, like, literally it was just because she didn't look totally white. They'd always, like, make fun of her hair. And then, of course, everything about her personality, even though it was exactly the same as Dan's personality. And you still got to see how that affected the writing for her, despite it not being directed at the creators, because she started off really strong in season one. She came out as a guest star, but then she quickly became a regular, and she was like the voice of reason, and she really like always helped Dan and Jenny bridge Brooklyn and the UES. But then by season two, it was like they'd start writing her with like, I don't know, just like everyone like getting the upper hand on her, or like they would promise storylines for her, be like, oh, we're going to introduce her sister and blah, blah, blah. And then like, it would never happen. Nothing would happen for her. And she'd get like romances. Like she had a romance with Nate that was super cute, but then it would just like always end with him like cheating on her or like ditching her or like whatever, you know, choosing one of the other girls over her at any given time. And then they wrote her off completely by season four. And it was like a really like shitty way that they wrote her off. And you didn't see her again until the series finale. Whereas Dan, obviously, got, like, just increased in importance every season, even though he was just, whatever, it's fine. If you love Dan, then great. But, again, he and Vanessa were basically the same, but he got, like, all the stuff that Vanessa didn't, and everyone would just agree that Dan was right, even though Vanessa was wrong, when they're doing the same thing!
And I remember them promoing Dan a lot, like... Yeah. Like, that's all I saw is promo of Dan. Right. That's all.
Well, like sure. And, like, so he's, like, the male lead or whatever, but it's supposed to be Gossip Girl, right? Mm. And then in the end, he was Gossip Girl. Mm. So, but he also got to marry Serena. So he got to marry Serena and be Gossip Girl. So I was like, this is ridiculous. But anyway. And then again, like, begin advent of social media with Angel Colby, who played Guinevere on Merlin, which we've talked about, like, the way that they would talk about Guinevere was crazy. Like, not only was she the most selfish and sluttiest and, like, you know, whatever, and also, like, she's hideous, right? They're like, oh, why, how can two white of our white boys like her when she is hideous? Even though she's done nothing but, like, be selfless and kind and help everyone and sometimes put Arthur in his place when he's being a little twat. And so while at least they stuck to their guns with that, like, she married Arthur and she became the queen after he died. But they still, like, once they got married, like, they almost never kissed. Like, I know y'all complain about Barry and Iris, but, like, literally, it was like they almost didn't touch each other. And it was like they may as well not have been married. It was very strange. Mm-hmm. So it did feel like, to a degree, they were, like, capitulating to the fandom's hatred of her by sort of keeping a distance. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. So, yeah. And the way that they would cheat on her sort of, they would do it to defend their slash ship, right? Like, oh, well, Merlin and Arthur need to be together, even though, you know, Arthur treats Merlin like shit, and Merlin gets Arthur killed by accident.
And anyway, you mentioned in another podcast, too, how they would always talk about her hair as well, right?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
But, yeah. And then the little coded words.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And then, of course, there was the right kind of incest ship that I'm sure Cammy and Ray would love. Which was Arthur and his sister Morgana. Oh, that people would have, other people would really wanted that to happen instead. So there you go.
The good that's kind of incest.
The right kind of incest. That's the story. Sorry.
Hey. Listen, I came from the Supernatural fandom. I know what that incest looks like. It was. I don't even want to talk about it. Anyway. I mean, I feel like the same about finding it harder to judge pre-social media fandom, primarily because I was one of those people in their own little bubble. I'd noticed things as a kid, but, like, was too young to truly understand the problem on a larger scale. So, like, subconsciously, I noticed Lisa didn't have any primary love interest, but I didn't ponder it for too long back then. And then with, like, Uhura and Kirk's kiss, I'd only heard about the backlash from my dad. But most of the time I hear about how, like, oh, but, you know, it was the first interracial kiss on television, and like how history kind of shapes the way we look at things, like as a milestone, kind of like how we hear about the Loving's case and the law passed allowing interracial couples to get married, but forget about the hardships that they went through. And then back then, like, there was no major accountability either. Like, so even when people would be recast or characters would just disappear from a show, there was no outlet to find out why immediately. So, like, some things remain mysteries even to this day. With Sean and Angela, you know, just really already talked about this, but like there were a couple that I loved, and I only recently learned that the writers quietly pushed for it because they realized how white their show was, and then they hired, you know, the black female writer, which was great. So I'm sure that the couple received some backlash. I don't know if there was like letters written or anything like that, but for me it was like super normalized, and it was easy to ignore the hate if it existed because you didn't see it, and it wasn't really constantly in our faces.
I felt like with Boy Meets World, I don't know, I feel like, you know, maybe they got, I'm sure that they got some pushback, and I'm trying to remember, like, just in my memories of the show, because, like, Shangela, they were kind of an off and on shit, so they weren't, like, super strong, you know, from the get-go till the end kind of thing, because they both had their own issues, as did Corey and Topanga. I remember for, like, a split second, they did, like, a, like, Corey and Topanga were broken up, Sean was single, and there was, like, a brief, like, flirtation with Sean and Topanga for a minute, and I remember that, and I don't know if that was kind of, like, because Sean was so popular, if they were, like, fine, we'll give you, like, a little, kind of like a, I feel like there was, like, the Harmony version of here, you can have this, but then we're gonna break it up immediately.
And I think that's really interesting because for Sean was like the biggest Corey and Topanga fanboy there ever was, you know? So like that whole Halloween episode was like based around him being upset that they were no longer together. So that, yeah, that's interesting.
I went, that was like a little bit of like, fine, like we'll give Sean like the girl, but really give Sean the girl, and we'll go back to the girl that we want for Sean, Angela.
Right.
And y'all can, like, be quiet. Yeah.
And I think it's interesting, too, because, like, if the actors' stories are anything to go by, they're, like, somebody asked about, you know, the impact of Shangela at the panel that I was at. And I feel like they're only just realizing the impact in terms of Sean and Angela, because, like, while social media brings hate, it also, like, brings positive stuff, too. So, you know, now they're finally getting to see with the fan interaction, because they're starting to go to, like, cons and stuff, what impact Shangela had on a lot of the fans, and how the, I'd like to think largely it was, like, positive, at least for the vocal, you know, the ones who are going and talking about it and things like that. So that was nice to hear. But long story short, like Jess said, it's hard to accurately assess horror stories from back then because either there wasn't like a place for fans to come together pre-forums and then like social media. And, you know, I was only in so many fandoms myself. And even then it was like a little bit scattered because it was like a bajillion forums and a bajillion message boards and whatever before like Twitter and all that stuff. So, yeah. Moving on to criteria 2, which is, and I forgot, how racist/homophobic backlash may have prevented characters of color from thriving on their shows. So how do we think that affected those characters in terms of, like, their writing?
Well, I already touched on a little bit about Lisa Turtle and Saved by the Bell and how I feel like her kiss and the resulting backlash may be the reason why she never got with Slater. Even though, like I said, it was like a revolving door of different ship pairings on that show, like, every couple episodes. Mm-hmm. And we've talked about this before, and I think one of our Men of Color podcasts, but because AC was, like, Latino, Mario Lopez, which, even though he's played by Mario Lopez, I don't even really think it was clear that he was coded, or that he was, I don't think it was clear if he was actually Latino or not in the show, like, AC stands for Albert Clifford, so...
Yeah. They did bring up on the show once, I think, that his dad changed their name, their last name.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah. Oh.
Yeah. So he can get into the military or whatever.
Oh.
Because clearly I've watched this show many times.
I do feel like with Slater, it was more of a little bit of, like, the Tarzan effect. Like, AC was this kind of, like, Latin lover kind of character that was only okay for, like, white women fantasy only. Mm-hmm. So, like, he was their Tarzan. And, you know, first that they had him and Zach fight over
Kelly.
Tiffany and Robinson. Kelly. And then he finally, like, ends up with Jesse at the end. But after, like, I feel like after the Zach and Lisa kiss fiasco with, like, the angry letters, the network, that it would be unimaginable for white teen girls to give up their exotic Tarzan to Lisa as well. So I feel like that's probably, for me, part of the reason why they never put them together. So, like, Jesse got to be AC's OTP, and Lisa is stuck, you know, trying to fend herself from Screech. And then we touched on Xena in our Women in Sci-Fi podcast, and I definitely remember back then, although I don't exactly know how I knew, I just knew that people referred, like, Xena was like a lesbian show. I was like, oh, that show, like, the lesbian show. If you watched it, then you must be a lesbian kind of thing. And I don't, like, cause I don't even know, like, I really don't know where I picked up on that, but because, again, like, I wasn't in any kind of, like, forums or whatever for Xena, but I just knew that that was, like, the collective census around Xena, and it was because of, you know, Xena and Gabriella's appearing. So, I mean, of course, I didn't care, because it's, like, all I cared about was the Greek mythology, there's work women, and it's fun, all that kind of stuff. But, like, looking back on all the obvious, like, hints and allusions to Xena being bisexual and she and Gabriella being in a relationship and how the network got, like, the only way that they could get around physically putting Xena and Gabriella together, like, making, like, getting them a kiss, was by putting Gabriella, like, in a man's body as a way to kind of, like, deal with the homophobia about, like, the show. Those are my two big ones where I feel like quiet fandom racism, older fandom racism, the pre-social media kind of fandom racism bled into the stories for these characters that they weren't allowed to, like, fully develop or fully explore because of networks reacting to the, you know, angry letter campaigns and all that kind of stuff.
Right.
And so probably media as well, whoever's reviewing those shows, because we know that media is super white. So whoever is, and probably media is like the pre-social media. So from fandom, you know, since creators couldn't really get into fandom that easily back then, the only thing they have to go by is like the media outlets, who are also very super white and probably also very super reflective of the white fandoms that had issues with, like, the same issues with the show.
Yeah. Those are wonderful thoughts. As for my thoughts, I can't follow an outline to save my own life, so I already told y'all how Gossip Girl and Merlin were affected by...
It's okay, I repeated
by the racism
too.
Against Vanessa and Gwen. So instead, I will tell you, how Lana is kind of a reverse. Like, obviously, Lana didn't end up with Clark, and didn't even stick around to the end of the show, but that was Kristen's decision. She was the one that left the show. And so while she was on the show, I would say the showrunners fought very hard to keep her as a leading lady and to keep the relationship that they wanted going. So, you know, for 7 to 8 seasons, because I think she left after 7, but then she came back to fulfill her contract for those 5 episodes and 8. I think that's how that was, right?
I only remember the one where she came back and suddenly her body was like kryptonite, so her and Clark physically could not be together.
That's when she came back in 8.
Yeah.
And then, you know, Lois just disappeared for 5 episodes after admitting that she loves Clark and they almost kissed, but then Lana was there, so she just couldn't be on screen. Anyway, see, like, I'm already getting worked up about it, but that was a sign that that's how devoted they were to Lana, you know? They were like, fuck you, Lois, for 5 episodes. So now Lana can finish out her story. Thank you very much. So even though, like, people, you know, I mean, obviously there were Lana shippers for sure. And they were very mad when Kristen, you know, left the show or when they didn't end up together. But for the people that didn't ship it, right? Like, if you ship Clois or whatever, then that's great. Like it was maddening for you. But don't you wish that other showrunners were like that? You know, fought for their leading ladies as hard as Smallville did. It would be nice to see that replicated in other places. So I think that was a little bit interesting, right? Like, despite, and Lana got a lot of hatred, right? Like, as we've already kind of mentioned, she got a lot of pushback, a lot of hate, a lot of racism directed at her. But still, like, even if you go back and look at, like, or, like, listen to commentaries on the DVDs or whatever, the way the showrunners talk about her, it's very clear that they were, like, really into Lana. Even if I think it was, like, a little bit creepy the way that they were. But it doesn't matter, because the point is that they fought for her to keep her on, to keep her as Clark's, you know, OTP, etc. So that's interesting. That's something that you don't see very often. Whereas most of the time it's like Boy Meets World, but much, much faster, right? Like Twisted. I don't know what Twisted was supposed to be.
Twisted was like, that was like the, you said Gossip Girl's on the cusp of like the social media phase. Twisted was
next up was on, Twisted. Exactly.
On social media.
Yes.
Whiplash. Oh my God.
So yeah, so that's how you see, like, that's when you see it really, like, and again, like, I'm not in their mind, so I don't know if they always meant to pivot to What's-Her-Face.
No. But, and even if they did, I'm sure they eventually wanted to get to it, but they, I doubt
it. Yeah, but not the way they did it. It was literally like a flip of a switch. Like, and Danny was obsessed with, in love with Lacey. It was, there was, and yes, Joe had feelings for him, but he was clearly, like, saw her as, like, I honestly thought for the first half of the season, I thought that they was going to reveal they were siblings.
Still siblings, yeah, me too. Yeah. And then they, like, switched it up and gave her, like, a different sibling that they still put her with.
Yes. But, like, the switch was crazy. Like, suddenly, out of nowhere, he and Lacey just weren't compatible anymore. And
it destroyed, like, Lacey's whole entire storyline for the back half of the season. Mm-hmm. They didn't go with her, and so, like, we'll just, like, make her into a lesbian, and that can be a thing. And it's like, well, you didn't even build that up or build that into her character.
Yeah, it came out of in one episode. I don't know where. And that's the thing too. Like,
I was gonna say, I sometimes wonder if because of like I was thinking about Supergirl, why you guys were talking about Twisted and how that changed, kind of like the course of the show. And I sometimes wonder like because of the Whiplash when it came to James and Kara's relationship and how like that ended abruptly. Mm-hmm. Why the fact that her love life is just kind of all over the place now.
Yeah. I mean, that is why.
Yeah.
Because they haven't been able to replace narratively what mm-hmm. they wanted to originally do exactly. with James. So like, since like Jessica just said, that was like full on social media. Like I was so shocked when I like would like log on to like forums or whatever and like see like Twitter feed got twisted, like how much hate there was for Lacey. Like, it made no sense to me because she's that character, like, she was like the Blair Waldorf of that show, you know, and everyone fucking loves Blair, right? And Joe would be like the Serena or the Vanessa, really. And yet everyone loved Joe. Suddenly it was poor Joe. Hashtag poor Joe. So, like, that's the thing. In the first half, the fandom was saying poor Joe about everything, but the show didn't really care. And in the second half, the show literally hashtags poor Joe over a Danny and Lacey makeout scene.
Wow.
Yeah. And I was like, okay.
And that show only lasted one season, right?
Yeah, and then it got canceled because it was bullshit.
Yeah.
Because the ratings. Because as loud as social media was, when they got what they wanted, which was Danny and Joe, the ratings dropped in the second half because people didn't give a shit about Danny and Joe. So. There you go. Don't capitulate to racist fandoms because they're not actually the ones that are necessarily watching.
They're not very wise either, so.
Yes.
You should just not listen to them, period.
So, May.
Oh. Okay. I feel like this isn't backlash per se because it was never confirmed in canon, even if it was implied. But I think if Xena was a show in 2018, they would have made her, like, a canon lesbian rather than teasing it and never fully going there. So, like, even the implication and people's bias prevented Xena from being a woman or a lesbian woman, whereas, like, there may have been more pushback now with social media. So, like, in the original Star Trek, I think Uhura would have had more of a romance with Kirk, and what am I trying to say here? I've heard the backlash about the network receiving, you know, letters or whatnot about the interracial kiss. And I think obviously racism and bias played a role in her not receiving any kind of romance down the line after that, even. So, like, even if the kiss was, what, a dream or it didn't actually happen, that they chose specifically, and because of that, I feel like they chose specifically Uhura to have a romance with Spock, arguably the more stable of the two between him and Kirk, when they rebooted the universe and made the movie. For Lisa from Saved by the Bell, people will argue that it was like a one and done deal. And I talked about this a little bit earlier, but it really wasn't. It was like a setup for a storyline because, like I said, as, like watching it as a kid, it just, like, went to the next episode. I'm like, did I miss, like, was there a hiatus? What was happening? Like, did I miss 5 episodes where this, you know, played out and then they ended the relationship? But, like, it was literal whiplash. It just went from one thing and then it just, like, it never happened. And they put him with Tori and that whole relationship was just whatever. And I feel like that was, like you said, Jess, was why Lisa never had, like, a real steady boyfriend during the entire run of the show. But Screech, portrayed as, like, the annoying but nice nerd, he got to have one. So I was just scratching my head the entire time over what happened. And then later I discovered that, you know, Mark Paul Gosselaar and
Lark Voorhees.
Lark Voorhees dated in real life for, like, 3 years. So I feel like that might have been one of the reasons they wanted to do that storyline on screen. But then they just never did. They just crawled into their hole of fear for letting a black woman date the lead of the show and then threw that away. bringing it to Smallville, though, like, given that the show started pre-social media, Lana would have definitely gotten a bit more love than she did from fandom had she been white. And maybe even the Chloe and Clark fandom would have shipped them because she still wouldn't have been Lois in their eyes, but she also wouldn't have been an Asian woman in a role they thought belonged to Chloe because she was white.
The other thing that going back to the Anon was asking about, thinking about characters like Tyr and Andromeda was fetishized, and Harry Kim from Voyager was completely emasculated and dismissed. Mm-hmm. And I was thinking, like, with Andromeda, like, I think it's like the Tarzan effect again, like the, you know, men of color kind of fantasy kind of thing going on, maybe. In that situation, and then with Harry Kim on Voyager, because he's an Asian man, and Asian men are usually, that's kind of like the coded kind of thing for them, that they are more, not feminine, but not non-sexualized. They're not really sexualized at all, and you get that repeated over and over again in a lot of media and a lot of shows, and so, like, you know, I can see how he would suffer from that, being an Asian man in Star Trek Voyager. So again, it's kind of like that, those little stereotypes or boxes that men of color get put into, and then that also affects that their storylines and how they're written and how they're received, because it's catering to, like, one vision of what these men are supposed to be about or should be about or whatever. So because Harry Kim is an Asian man, that he's, like, desexualized and emasculated and dismissed and looked down on. And then with Tyr from Andromeda, just, I never watched Andromeda, but just, like, I Google searched him, was like, oh yeah, he's like a Tarzan kind of thing. He is, like, he looks like he's, like, proto Aquaman.
Jason Momoa.
God, brain fart. But, like, just, like, looking at him in my Google search, he looks like a proto-Jason Momoa type. And that's probably how he was treated.
Sad times. Moving into criteria 3. Do we think social media would have helped characters of color and LGBTQ characters if they'd had vocal fandoms back in the day?
So I would say that, yes, I do think that just like social media has helped racists be loud and wrong, it can help those of us don't want to be racist or don't want to be homophobic to elevate characters that we care about, right? Or actors, etc. And I think that just based on our experience of the Flash fandom, that we can say that that is definitely something that we can use social media for, right? Advocating for our favorites, asking questions about them to ensure that they get more exposure, right? Reaching out to different magazines or to interviewers, etc., just to let them know that we want to send love to this person, right? Like, that is something that you can do, and that it is a great way to use social media. And it also does help make people more aware. Like, yes, sometimes cancel culture can take things to the extreme, but, like, for example, with the 100, right? Where they said, like, oh, well, they didn't realize that bury your gaze was a trope. So when they killed off Lexa in the way they did, they didn't realize that they were playing into a stereotype, right? That they were taking away a very unusual happy ending for a lesbian character. But now they couldn't, they can't say that in the future, right? Now they know, you know, every writer on that show knows. So if they ever go onto a different show and do something similar, well, we know that they know and we have the receipt. And all other writers on social media at that time, they certainly know. There was like 300 articles about Lexa, right? That year, that whole year was filled with media about the way that they killed off Lexa. So anything that you see in the future, right? Like Orange is the New Black killing off Poussey.
But it still happens though, because then you have like Star Trek Discovery.
Yes. So like, it doesn't stop it from happening, but you know that they know, right? They can't fake ignorance about it. That's what I'm saying. And hopefully the people that get the backlash specifically won't do it again. Other people can, you know, like Star Trek Discovery will pretend like they, you know, that they didn't mean anything by it, but you know that they did because there's no way they don't know at this point. Which also allows you to decide what you're going to watch or not, right? Like, you're more informed about the information that they possess as well. But yeah, at the same time, it's not always a good thing, because with unfettered access to actors and creators, people can freely send all that abuse that you're trying to protect them from, right? And that gets more loud and more wrong. But seeing as people were still suffering extreme racism, or not still, we're suffering even more extreme racism before, right? Even without social media, it's better to just utilize the good side of it than to, I guess, sit around thinking, like, I wish we didn't have social media because then we wouldn't be getting this abuse online, right? Because there's people that are using the internet to be bigots would be doing it in a different way if they didn't have the internet, right? They would still be acting on that in real life.
Yeah, I would say like the short answer to the question of would social media have helped elevate characters of color and LGBT characters if they had vocal fandoms, the short answer would be yes, because I think the part of the thing about, again, being in older fandoms is that people were too isolated in their separate bubbles. So, you know, even if you did see, you know, there's some negativity around the treatment of a certain, like, minority character, if you thought that you were, like, the only one that was like, am I the only one that likes this minority character? Then, you know, it's kind of hard to, like, act by yourself if you think you're, like, solitary and the only person out there. But social media has allowed people, both good and bad, to connect and find other like-minded people to, you know, pull together like a fan base and a voice to help promote what they love about the show and obviously what they don't like. But as a viewer, I think I avoided all of the bad things, but maybe if I had known about them, I could have counteracted to protect my face. But again, like, it's kind of hard to act as a single solitary person. So I think one of the good things about fandom when you find one is the kind of camaraderie of everybody. And you feel like you've got like backup, because especially like going, like standing a minority character, you need backup in fandom because of just like the way that these characters are treated, just off, not on the same playing field as the rest of the characters in a cast. I feel like there's a lot of would've, could've, should've when you look back about, you know, what could have been done for characters of color in those older shows. But I think now fans of minority characters have developed kind of a thick skin and definitely like a trigger response. Like, I know like a lot of people are like, oh, you know, this fandom is so mean or so whatever, whatever, but I think a lot of people got away with saying like really slick shit before fandom and social media took off. And that's the other thing. Like, if you're in your like negativity bubble space and with your other like negative friends talking in your coded racist language, and you think that, oh, this is a normal thing, and you get on social media and you're like, someone hits you back, and then you're shocked, like, what is going on? It's like, well, that's, someone's going to, like, tell you, like, what it is. So, especially for people like us that have, like, been in this situation multiple times and multiple shows and multiple fandoms, you know, once we lock on to our minority character that we identify with, or any character, really, like, that's our child, And this house, we are going to defend our child, and we're not going to come here talking about your crap. So,
yes.
I remember, I think we had talked about this on the origin of kind of social media on a similar podcast. And I think it was someone that wrote, they were writing about Harry Potter, and they were writing about, like, they connected it to, like, the rise of social media and, like, mm-hmm. arguing with creators, and how, I think it was, like, the Harry Hermione fans were, like, mm-hmm. writing letters and campaigns and, you know, trying to push the narrative that these are the two characters that are supposed to be together. And
well, to add on to that, even if it might not have anything to do with the actual section, but, like, fan fiction was also, like, a way you could tell which characters might have been more popular, which fandoms were, like, more toxic, and all of this stuff just by through fan fiction writers, like the Harry and Hermione shippers. Well, semi-long answer is absolutely. Or, like, I think they at least would have gotten more notice about how much, you know, like, writers would have gotten more notice about how much these characters are loved and valued, and what they'd like to see more of in terms of writing for these characters. Like, something that social media has made easier is everyone's, like you said, unifying against the haters. It's also easier for people to actually see evidence of the haters and exactly the lengths they go to erase Black characters and other characters of color. Yeah. And, like, I agree with Jess that back then people were everywhere, like, scattered. So if there was a letter being sent, then who would really know about it, you know? Like, but now everyone has learned the coded language and other types of ways racist and homophobic people operate within fandom. So it's, like, to the benefit of all characters of color, because there's more of a united front, even if there's, like, a negative side that they have to see it, but at least now it's kind of, like, out there, and that people kind of see that it exists, you know, in front of their eyes.
And I actually agree with that. I feel like it's because, like, because older fandoms, we didn't have those kind of, like, it wasn't easy. Everyone's in their own little bubble that you couldn't, not only you couldn't, like, communicate with and form, like, united front, but you also didn't know what you were up against. Mm-hmm. And so now with social media and fandom and all the quoted words and the forums that you read about, you know, Kristen Kruick or with Candace Patton and as Iris was in The Flash or any other, you know, Abby Mills, long list of characters, and you see the same coded languages pop up every time. When you see, like, if it's a Black woman, no matter who she is, what kind of character she's playing, the same coded languages come up. So we've got, like, our list of receipts. So, like, you spent, like, all of your time honing your skills and developing this thick skin, you know, about these different characters in like, the older fandom, so that now we've got, like, I don't want to hear your bullshit about how she's doing. How she's too this, how she's too that, how her hair's messy, how, you know, her eyes are too small, or whatever kind of, like, coded list of terms. I have them all down. I have receipts. If you come out with any bullshit, I'm going to hit you back with it.
And you can edit your little whatever pictures. You can tweet whatever you want, but we have, and delete them, but we have screenshots, so.
Yes.
Exactly. That's what social media is for, the receipts.
Basically.
We're moving into criteria 4. I'm sorry. So, social media aside, in what ways do you guys think writers can strive to take bias out of their work or at least offset it now that, you know, maybe they're more aware of the things that go on?
If they want to offset it, how can they?
Yes.
Like, yeah.
How can they remove bias from writing when writing characters of color?
Yeah. Exactly. The first thing you have to do is hire writers of, if you're doing a story, if you're doing a story that is dealing with a specific ethnicity, specific race, like, for example, we know I Feel Bad just coming out, and I believe that family is, well, there was a new show called I Feel Bad, and the executive producer is Amy Poehler, but she has a co-executive producer, who is an Indian woman.
Oh, yeah.
It's about an Indian family.
Oh, I think I've seen, like, commercials for this on the plane.
Yes, yes. And so she has someone with her, like, and I'm sure that, in fact, it wasn't Amy's idea. You know what I'm saying? Like, Amy is there to make sure this woman's show gets made. Mm-hmm. But like in that case, they have a writer's room that understands that family, right? And even though they're saying that it's not really going to be about being an Indian immigrant, right? But that's not the point of it. They're still able to write from that perspective. And that's something that you want to be able to have. Like we already discussed how Magnum PTI doesn't have any Latino writers, even though Jay Hernandez is Latino and he is now not a white man, right? And that should make a difference, but apparently not to them. So that's not a good idea. Do it like I feel bad. and then like, as we brought up many times, The Flash does not have black women writers, even though they have now three black women, right? They've had Iris this whole time. Now they have three black women. So hire black female writers, The Flash.
One of the things like Rick Gonzalez on Arrow, because they have Latino writers, and I think he actually posted about it, or made a post about, you know, how he was glad that there were Latino writers in the writer's room. Mm-hmm.
And presumably we'll see, you know, we're going to see that difference now. So hopefully. But anyway, that's the biggest thing. Show your commitment to understanding another perspective by hiring people who already do understand that perspective or are coming from that place. And then the other thing is like, do your research, right? Whenever you're writing something new that you don't know about, do your research. Don't start off casting, you know, like, what, don't make Savitar Barry. Choose another person to make Barry, not Savitar, the god, the Hindu god of speed. Okay, but anyway.
Yeah, I think, you know, right, like, hire writers of color to write your characters of color. Seek advice. Give like opportunities for, you know, speaking like in not just writers, but also the actors and actresses that play those characters.
Mm-hmm.
Like talk to them, and you know, because going back to The Flash, because it's like the most diverse show on the Arrowverse, but with Carlos having to basically ad-lib 80% of the jokes that Cisco says, you would think at some point that they would just, like, have a one-on-one session with Carlos and be like, would Cisco say this? Or, you know, and him being, like, Latino man, like, if they wanted to incorporate more of Cisco's ethnicity into his character, like, you can actually talk to Carlos,
yeah,
and he can tell you, you know, that Nora would call him Tio Cisco and not Uncle Cisco or something like that, you know. Those little kind of things. Listen to your fans, mm-hmm, when they do give feedback.
Yeah, separate the wheat from the chaff, right?
Yes.
Don't listen when they're mad that they didn't get a sex scene last night, but do listen when
you that Iris would need at least a satin pillowcase for her hair.
Yes.
Right, you know, and just like, as far as like dealing with the criticism of fandom against minority characters, to believe in, like, writers should always believe in their story, but believe in their story first and foremost before, you know, just like, don't do like the Whiplash effect. Don't be twisted, because then your show gets canceled. You know, if you have a story, write your story. And, you know, and I feel like that's what The Flash did with Barry and Iris, specifically. They stuck with their story. And I think that's what you should do. Because at the end of the day, it's the writer's vision. And so if you're going to commit to include diversity in that vision, then you need to have like the strength or the metal to ride the racist waves and ride it out.
Right. That sort of reminds me what you were saying about like asking the actors about Karina McKenzie, talking about when she wrote an episode of the Originals, and then an actor, presumably Charles Michael David, is that his name?
I think so.
Someone who has three first names. But he came to her to tell her that he felt like something about that episode or the way that she'd written something was a little, like, was like playing on a racist trope, on a racist stereotype, or, you know. And so she took it out. She changed it. And so, like, it shouldn't have, like, she was grateful that he did come to her. But instead, if you're writing something that you feel could be sensitive in any way, ask your actors. That, you know, like, is this, you know, does this feel like it's coming from, you know, like, you'd be like, Emma, does this sound racist to you? But, like, you know, like, I feel like maybe I'm running into a trope here. Like, do you think that, is there something that you're uncomfortable with or whatever? Like, make it open, like, an environment where someone can come to you if they're uncomfortable.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I agree with everything you guys said. And just speaking to, I know this is social media aside, but, like, I feel like social media has helped. Because a lot of writers are on social media. So, like, you were saying, when they killed Lexa off on the 100, there was, like, an immediate backlash. And so now that they should know better, that this is a trope that they wrote and this is terrible because you're basically, like, just using your lesbian character and then just killing her in the moment of happiness that she was supposed to have with Clark. So that makes no sense. So, like, it wasn't unwarranted rage. You should listen to this criticism. And I feel like I hope The Flash has done this in terms of, like, the backlash with the Francine storyline in season 2 and how that's kind of being brought up again, as far as we know. Mm-hmm. Maybe because they heard the criticism and how it went down, and so now they're trying to, like, course correct and having, like, them talk about her. Or even the way that they portrayed, like, Cecile as a better mom and having Iris have her own arc as a mother this season that's not going to all be doom and gloom the entire time, you know? And filled with stereotypes, hopefully. And then other ways I feel like they can avoid writing without bias. Actually, like you said, have a more inclusive writing team. So if you're going to have a Black woman on your show, hire Black female writers, hire Latino writers, hire Asian writers, hire whoever. And just, even if you're not even writing characters of color, just hire, you know, more inclusivity. Like, this is the point. And then, because, like, change comes as much behind the scenes. So you can put as many characters of color in front of our eyes, in front of the camera, as you want. But at the end of the day, it's the little things that matter. Like, you're, like, I just think back on that story when Candace was saying about how, you know, how Black people don't eat noodles. Like, Grandma Esther's noodles are, like, famous. And how she and Jesse L. Martin joke about it all the time.
If it was, like, Grandma Esther's spaghetti,
yeah. Yeah, but she was saying something like, you know, they'd write it like chicken pot pie or something, like something different.
There's not a noodle dish.
Yeah. So these, it's just like the little things that feed into, like, a certain, you know, experience that certain writers don't have. So you have to, like, not try to write stereotypically by either having an inclusive writing team or, like you said, asking for advice so that you don't write in a tone-deaf way and just come off looking stupid. But that's basically it. So these are, like, the most basic things that writers can do to help, like, offset bias and all this stuff in writing, because it matters. So it's, you don't want to, you know, bring on a Latino character and write them, like, as if they're white. Like, you wouldn't write an Arab family and say, I'm going to ground you. Because Arab families don't ground their kids. You know? So it's like little, it's little things. So, yeah. Anyway. Anything else to add on?
Well, yeah. I was going to, like, jump back up to, like, the criteria, too. Because I was just thinking about Glenn from Walking Dead. And because, like, the Anon mentioned Harry Kim. And I was thinking about Glenn also being, like, an Asian man. And I'm wondering, like, I didn't read the comics for The Walking Dead, but I don't know if Tati, if you know, were Glenn and Maggie a thing in the comics as well,
yes,
or not?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay. Because I feel like, so I guess that's kind of like a, you know, they had, like, comic backstory for it, but also, I feel like they, from what I remember of The Walking Dead, because I like, dropped it, like, a couple seasons ago, but, you know, shortly after he died. But it was good that he was able to have, like, a romance, and that be, like, the beta ship, really, of, like, the show, even though, you know, everyone's all up Daryl's ass in his fandom, but, like, him being able to have and keep that romantic storyline as Asian man on a major network, not a major network because it's cable, but, like, a major television show, I think was good for him. And I feel like someone else that I wanted to mention, but I can't remember who it was. I think, like, another thing that you probably saw, this is probably going criteria one then, but, like, horror stories and, like, older fandoms, especially with, like, gay characters, there's a lot of, you get, like, a lot of, like, one-sided romances.
Mm-hmm.
like to show that this character's gay, but we're not going to put them in any kind of romance mm-hmm. whatsoever.
Yeah. Or for a long while, they were only just like used for like as a comedic side character that they would just use like as their jokes, and that's it. They would never get anything else.
Yeah. Right. Best friend.
Just be like the best friend, right?
Yeah.
All right. And really extravagant. Always like the stereotypes or stereotypes for especially I think gay men as well, just like super over the top and super flamboyant. Mm-hmm. And there's only that one personality trait. If you have a gay character, then they are like this. So I do appreciate more now, I think, that you start to get more different facets of LGBT people, and they're not all of them are like the angry jock bully gay or like the extremely flamboyant gay, but you get, you know, people are different
shades of gray,
different shades.
Yeah. I feel like TV really perpetuated that stereotype, you know, like when people say, or used to say, I hope, like, oh, stop acting gay, and it would be like assuming that you, if you were like
right.
flamboyant or whatever, because that was like the yeah. only thing that you ever saw.
Yeah.
Unfortunately.
That's our sour topic for today.
Yeah. Yep, that's, yes. that's us today.
Thank you for coming to our, shit. Listening to our podcast, in which we, like over an hour and a half.
We hate everything all the time. world is a horrible place, and we are here to save you from it.
Yes, but let us know, you know, what fandoms you might have been in back in the day that had horror stories, or if you were in your own little bubble, and what shows and characters of color that you really like that you feel like were neglected, and why, you know, I mean, we yeah. know why, but you know, just tell us your thoughts and any of your other ideas if you have any. We'd love to hear them, as always. On Tumblr, ladieswgumption.tumblr.com, you can send us asks or emails, ladieswgumption@gmail.com. And until next time, we will be taking a hiatus next week, but we will be back soon with more topics. And until next time, bye.
Bye.